Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in after a two-week hiatus. It is vacation, I guess is the best way to put it. It's time for KER Politics. Jimmy just got back from Europe yesterday. I got a couple of questions I want to ask him. Jimmy, first of all, talk about the jab. Some of our listeners were curious, would you have to take it when you were over there?
No, I didn't. In fact, I wouldn't have gone if I would have done that, had to do that. Apparently, Europeans or others coming back into the United States, they do have to show proof of vaccination. But for American citizens, there was no requirement. But I'll tell you, there's a lot of growing concern when more information is coming out from, say, the UK, their National Institute for Health, as well as other German research, Swiss research, a number of other areas that are actually identifying some of the very significant problems with the jab, and people are not taking the boosters because they just realize that it's ineffective and there's some dangers involved with all of this.
Yeah. Jimmy, any comments on this new strain that's coming out?
Yeah, I think it's, let's just call it the MTV. The midterm variant.
Right.
You know, one more political action by health officials trying to support their political allies in order to keep themselves into power. And unfortunately, you know, we're seeing that with this national emergency on the monkeypox. It's just unbelievable that both WHO and the Biden administration have made those types of, declarations with a very limited number of people that have had it. And of course, the specific issues that are associated with it, who's getting the monkeypox virus, since primarily gay men that are involved in gay sexual activity with numerous gay men. So, let's put our heads on straight and kind of stop listening to the idiocies there that are trying to drive political ends.
There are clearly some idiocies out there. We're going to be talking more about that later in the show. Jimmy, I want to hear about the general opinion in Europe about what's going on in Ukraine. The reason I want to hear this is I did a fair amount of research on current events in the Ukraine right now. Russia is very definitely having trouble right now. There was some talk about untrained or not adequately trained Russian soldiers. There was some talk about the fact that it is simply not turning out to be a rollover for the great big bear to take over Ukraine. Zelensky's folks are doing, from the article that I read, I would have to say, for the most part, pretty good. Give me an opinion on what the people over there are saying.
Well, I was with some very senior, very, very senior EU and NATO analysts this last week, some of the top ones, actually. And, the Europeans are looking at this problem very seriously. They are incredibly worried about what Russia is doing on, in a near abroad in Ukraine and what the ramifications are. Are if they succeed. So they are involved in trying to make sure that Russia fails. There is no coordinated effort. There is no coordinated NATO effort, with the exception of the training, the equipping, and kind of the broad spectrum of political support for Ukraine. And it is making it a very difficult, fight either way. And, how this turns out is anybody's guess. I do say from the beginning, Russia never won this and will never win it in the long run. And they are having a very, very difficult time. The numbers right now are about 4-1 disadvantage for the Russians. So for every one Ukrainian soldier lost, and that's significant, there's about 4 Russian soldiers lost. That's a very hard effort to continue over a period of time, especially when they've committed a very large percentage of their actual combat power. What that means is that if something You know, if the Ukrainians somehow are able to muster a major offensive, it's going to be difficult for them. They're having to move, the Russians are having to move their supply lines farther back because of the capabilities brought to them by some of the Western, in particular U.S. Artillery pieces. And then, of course, the Russians are still consolidating. But the thing is, they're absolutely leveling towns and cities. And the Europeans have a very near memory of what happened in World War II.
Yeah.
And they also know what happened in the former Balkans, you know, in the former Yugoslavia.
Yeah.
So they are incredibly worried about this entire debacle on their border. And in spite of, you know, some of our listeners and some of the people out there that somehow think that Russia is trying to do the right thing here, you know, it's just turning into an absolute catastrophe on all sides. And yes, everyone understands the level of corruption in Ukraine. It's been existence since the Soviet Union. A lot of the same oligarchs that run Ukrainian businesses run Russian businesses. They're very well connected, and it's hard to change that. But you're seeing moves by the Ukrainian government to kind of protect their independence and to protect their integrity and to take away the people that are being basically supportive of Russia.
Yeah.
So, you know, some people say that's undemocratic. Well, they're in the midst of a defensive war trying to keep for their survival. So I don't know. I'm not going to judge them on that too harshly. But I do think, in fact, a better coordinated plan from NATO and allies could bring peace, which is probably the best way to go about it. And unfortunately, I'm not seeing anything from the White House or from NATO leadership that are pushing a very effective policy towards negotiation.
Jimmy, what is your impression after having come back from Europe? What's your impression of the level of support that the United States is giving to the Ukrainians and the level of support that the European nations are giving to the Ukrainians?
Well, so a lot of European partners are a little bit confused. Many of them right now are looking at, again, they equate back, and we've talked about this a bit before, the Afghanistan pullout, leaving many allies in their their partners and volunteers hanging in Afghanistan. There's a big bureaucracy in the EU, a huge bureaucracy in NATO. Operations very complex to get anything done. So basically, many of you can't look at them as in one particular way. They're, you know, each country has a different view and each leader has a different view. And I will say that, unfortunately, is part of the problem here. We just don't have consolidated Western values policy that that will actually kind of bring the warfare to some sort of balanced conclusion.
Jimmy, what's the general consensus in Europe? I don't want to use the word general consensus. What's the majority opinion in Europe right now of what's going on? Are they supportive of Ukraine or supportive?
Yeah, absolutely. They are all scared to death of Russia. This is a reality that many people in the United States do not understand. Most Eastern European countries lived under, in fact, all of them lived under Soviet Russian, authoritarian control. They pushed away from it, and they have really cleaned house to try to stop it in Hungary and Poland, Czech Republic, Slovakia. Some of them, like in Slovenia, not so. You know, they're still kind of this. They were never really held under the same authoritarian principles that the former Soviets satellite states were. But all of those countries have very, very large concerns. And then, of course, in Germany and France, there's the political balance between the left and the right. But unanimously, people are concerned and very fearful. And they look at the Russians as a kleptocracy.
Yeah.
They very clearly look at them as abusive and overbearing. And that's just the way that they see it. And they've known it that way for a long time. There's not a lot of happiness or support for Russia. Of course, they don't like many of these countries are very offended by the oligarchs and the massive amount of wealth. I actually was looking in the bay in Trieste.
Jimmy, got to take a real quick commercial break. We're going to continue this conversation in the next short segment. Stick around, you guys.
your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. I'm going to talk a little bit in this particular segment. We're going to continue discussing Jim's experiences in Europe for the past week, his experiences specifically that relate to the topics that we talk about on this particular program. Jimmy, finish your train of thought from the last segment when we had to cut for the commercial break. You were talking about a very, very expensive yacht that was stolen.
Yeah, so while I'm there, your question was, how do the other Europeans feel about it? And I can tell you they're very concerned and they're taking actions, very, very bold actions to push and pressure powerful Russian oligarchs. And I was actually in the port of Trieste, out in town there, and looked out and saw the 470-foot sailing yacht called Sailing Yacht A, SYA, priced at, get this, about $580 million. And the Italian government seized it in March, late March, after the Russian invasion. And of course, this is the case in many, many of the assets of the Russian oligarchs around the region. A lot of their property, a lot of their yachts, and of course, financial assets have been seized by Europeans. They are absolutely concerned, and they are taking actions that just the coordinated effort and the inability for them to put too much pressure is. One, because they're concerned about Russian energy supplies to Western Europe and the potential impact. So they're balancing that. And the Russians have forced the Germans to succumb in some ways by accepting some of the sales. And of course, nobody's really being affected by the broader sanctions. The Russians are not being affected by the broader sanctions with because they're able to make oil sales to India and China at very high prices. At the market prices that are way up there. So they're making money right now. The Russians are making money. The Europeans are very concerned. And the second thing they're the Europeans are very concerned about is the potential pushback from Russia if Ukraine makes headway in the east or potentially in the Crimea. They're very concerned about the possibility of an expanded war or Russia lashing out. So they're taking, they're taking some actions, and we'll see what happens with this. Because I do suspect, I will, my analysis says that the Ukrainians will do some sort of counterattack and put the Russians under intense pressure for some period of time. How long that lasts, no one knows. What the ramifications will be at this point, no one knows. It's a chess game, and we'll see how that plays out.
Well, Jimmy, I want to talk about that chess game a little bit now. Basically, the world, with the exception, I would have to say, probably of mainland China, is, and they have been very astute in not getting involved in this thing, in my opinion. I mean, we're going to talk about Taiwan here in the next hour. What's going on in Taiwan right now is really, really interesting. But the Russians so far are not getting much support, if any, from mainland China now. In terms of the specific European countries, I am under the impression that the European country that's giving the most support to Russia is kind of a combination of Germany and France. Am I correct in that assumption, Jim?
Well, okay, I think you didn't want to say support, but that are being leveraged in order to kind of still fund or pay for energy supplies from Russia. They're being blackmailed. And of course, their populations are under big threat. They actually are shutting down. I was in Germany, Munich yesterday, and down in the streets in Garmisch-Partenkirchen, they actually turned off the power around the city during the evening, so there's no streetlights or anything, to save energy. They're being forced to make significant energy cuts. They're having, a very, big impact without the gas supplies coming in. And it's affecting all the European countries. The ones that are most affected are Germany and France. They are not supporting Russia, but they're absolutely bound and being held hostage by them. I don't see anybody that's actually supporting them. The only country that I would say has been playing of like, hey, less, a less aggressive role towards Russia would be Hungary, because they don't want to get involved in it because they're a border country and they've been invaded by the former Soviet Union with Russian troops before.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are these a few of the countries that are just trying to be careful in the middle of the small ones that don't have much support would be hung out to dry if there was a significant problem. So there's a tough balance for NATO and the U.S. to keep those countries in line and or at least talking the same with the same voice. But clearly, sanctions are not working effectively. And unfortunately, you know, China is one of the big purchasers of Russian energy. So that's very much helping Russia because they're paying. And now they're cutting a deal to actually make payments in yuan, in Chinese currency, so and in ruble. So
yeah.
That's actually having a big impact on global actual currency markets. And there's an attempt to reshape the global currency exchange system and take the dollar off as the primary petrodollar exchange method. And we don't know if this is going to work. I tend to think it won't, but it could potentially if they continue to gain ground. And that's what many people don't realize. Russians and Chinese would not stop if they were able to, in my view, they would not stop if they were able to have an opportunity to gain ground in any opportunity.
Well, I've been following the energy markets for most of my career, and I know that the elimination of the petrodollar has been on the minds of many, many of the large energy suppliers. So if it happens here, I guess the only comment I can make is it will be very interesting to see the impact that it has on the markets, the financial markets around the world. I want to get into that if you're willing to do that. I want to do that after the top of the hour news. I think it's very, very critical what's going on right now in a macro sense in terms of that topic. What's going to happen? I mean, the United States right now is in a very, very interesting situation economically. I mean, Biden says we're not in a recession. Well, okay, we may not be in a recession, but I have to say that there are a lot of things going on financially in the United States right now that are going to be even more detrimental. Things like supply chains are going to be more detrimental in the future because it's very difficult to get certain items because of that. In terms of interest rates, that could, what I would call, straighten out the housing market. You get interest rates that are not at all conducive towards mortgages, and I think the housing markets will go back to normal. At least I certainly hope that they will. Some people are going to totally disagree with that, but I have to say that these inflated prices are detrimental. You guys, we're going to be right back after the news. Stick around.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. Top of the hour news break always interrupts the Corlin Economics Report, but that's actually fine. The news that's coming across in the 20 or 25 towns that broadcast our show on their local radio stations is very important. I hope you pay attention. Having said that, Jimmy, I want to talk a little bit about Speaker Pelosi and her grandstanding trip to Taiwan. Give me your opinion on that, would you? When I say grandstanding trip, I think that what she showed is I think that the mainland Chinese now totally understand that the United States supports Taiwan, come hell or high water. Was it a good thing to do it that way? What do you think?
Well, I will say that it was probably not a bad, well, it's a complicated problem, but here's what I think this was all about. If you, it really had very little to do with reestablishing and reaffirming U.S. commitment to support Taiwan.
Why do you
I think
say
it had
that?
More to do with domestic Democrat politics. The White House is looking very weak on China policy right now because there's been so many influences and of course with the Biden administration and the Biden family themselves, Chinese influences that have reducing potential Trump timeframe tariffs by allowing some of these sales of national oil reserves to China. Some of these issues are very significant to the voters in some of these key districts because they understand the problems with China. So my take on Nancy Pelosi's trip, it was really about domestic politics, trying to show that Democrats are still bold and against China. And I think it was probably coordinated with the White House, and the White House said, no, don't do it because we don't want to create these problems. But in fact, I think this was all about a political show and not so much to the Chinese. There are other ways to show commitment, weapons sales, sailing through the strait, a bigger commitment with military force, and actually coordinating with our regional allies, with the partners that are concerned about China's expansion as well, the Philippines, the Australians, the Japanese. Those are ways to make very solid strategic statements and coordinated efforts through U.S. Indo-Pacific Command and other concerned regional partners.
Yeah.
Grandstanding through this entire, in my view, is a fabricated media effort event to show that she's not weak on China, especially after her husband is making a ton of money on some of these investments in China.
Right. Well, let me ask you one thing. When you talk about a more overt way to show support, what about the Ronald Reagan? I mean, the big aircraft carrier that's over there, along with the flotilla of support ships.
Yeah, so there's always carrier stationed in the region, and then we continually float them through the region, and that it's nothing new. It's not showing anything different.
I didn't realize that, Jimmy. I didn't realize that.
Yes, of course. We have a carrier stationed out of Japan, and of course the Reagan moving over there. There's usually a couple in the region. So it is a bit of a statement. Part of it was, again, showmanship on the administration's part to position them there. And if, in fact, it was positioned there for Pelosi's trip prior to, then you could guarantee that it was a political staged movement from the White House in support with Austin's very political Pentagon. Rattling the sabers is probably not the way to solve the problem with China. Actually, economic power and using allies in the region and coordinating our efforts in the region is a much more effective way. And then actually being bold. The Trump administration was incredibly bold with China. They wanted to be partners, but at the same time they said, hey, look, we're not going to succumb to your pressures.
Yeah.
And this is very interesting to watch the Chinese make these threats of assault and attack. The reported, and I don't know how accurate the report is, but of potentially shooting down Nancy Pelosi's plane. That's ridiculous. But what I do see is a very weak Biden regime that is unable to have bold decision-making processes that might encourage the Chinese to take action as they feel threatened from the expansion of Taiwan's republic, the Republic of Taiwan, and their democracy potentially spreading into Beijing and other areas. There are numerous reports up to 400,000 people recently leaving the Chinese Communist Party. That's a significant number of of party members because of frustration with their actions right now. And you're seeing some very difficult problems in China with the real estate prices. You're seeing the authoritarian control through social credit scores. You're seeing a lot of pressures on people. And of course, they've got that demographic issue because of the one-child policy, where they've got a very aged population and not enough people to support them.
Right.
So,
you know, Jim, I want to bring up some things that I think may help the Democrats in the upcoming election, and I want to get your opinion on these things. I waited for you to get back to really go into that because I wanted to see what you had to say. To me, some of these deals kind of make sense. Now, number one, I want to talk about the price of prescription drugs. Okay. Biden pledged that he would do something in terms of getting the U.S. dependence on China for our prescription drugs, diminishing that dependence. To me, that's a good thing. I want your opinion on that.
Well, I would say that it would be a good thing if, in fact, he was working towards that end. But I think this inflation reduction bill that they're putting forward right now for this weekend to argue over, which apparently is going to be a pretty crazy argument over the time, really is not that influential for that type of action. I think a lot of it is smoke and mirrors, which is typically what the Democrats say. So, yeah, he's saying a lot of things, just like Nancy Pelosi saying that they would support Taiwan. She's there. But the reality is, would they do that? Can you trust this administration to do that, especially
that
when they're spending like $380 billion on
yeah.
green energy products, which are just payoffs actually to Chinese companies?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I don't
trust them.
Yeah, no, that was the question that I had. But then let's get back to a couple of the other issues that he said they were going to do. Number one, chip manufacturing. The majority of U.S. demand for chips, instead of being met in Taiwan and to an extent in mainland China, he's going to move all of that manufacture back to the United States. Is that a possibility given the magnitude of that industry?
No, it's not possible. There are this bill that they recently passed will incentivize chip manufacturing here, but it's also, again, it's political payoff to different groups and organizations, and they're picking and choosing winners rather than allowing the market to dictate the terms. Now, there's no question having the dependency on the Taiwanese for chip manufacturing, sophisticated chip manufacturing, is a very dangerous strategic position, and it's good to see moving away from that. How that's enacted, once again, we'll have to see if, in fact, it's effective or not. And often these attempts by government influence are not anywhere near as effective as actual market forces and good decision making and actually incentivizing through tax reduction and movement rather than actually giving people money. And that's what they're doing.
Well, that's a really good point. I thought that those actions probably made some sense on the part of the Democrats, but I had a feeling in the back
of
my mind.
They
sound good. I had a feeling in the back of my mind that they simply sounded good, but the feasibility, the percentage of possibility that they would actually be incurred into the U.S. economy were somewhat limited, to say the least. You guys, we're going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit about the primaries, just to wrap up KER politics for this week, and we're going to talk a very little bit about the U.S. economy yet again. Stick around. Welcome back here to wrap up KER Politics. You know, we'd be very amiss if we didn't talk about the primaries that are occurring right now in the United States. Jimmy, what do you have to say about them?
Well, okay, so in Arizona, Carrie Lake pulled out a victory over, she's strongly supported by the Trump team, pulled out a victory over a very wealthy Republican who tried to identify herself with the same type of America First policies. Actually, she's married to a billionaire. But Carrie Lake, the newscaster that quit the news because of the control on speech and the failures in Arizona and the border, came out victorious in the primary. Blake Masters, another very strongly supported Trump candidate, America First candidate, won the primary there. For the Senate race, Tudor Dixon in Michigan won the race for in the primary for governor, another Trump-supported candidate. Some of these were close races. Some of them were actually, Masters just, you know, crushed it. So we're seeing, again, a very interesting development where anti-Trump Republicans are being sidelined through the primary process. Mm-hmm. The Democrats believe that they may have an advantage by getting Trump-supported candidates as their opponents. And, of course, that is a calculation where they've actually put funding and resources to help support some of those Trump-supported candidates because they think they're going to be weaker. I think that is a catastrophic mistake on the Democratic Party. They're focusing on how they can get Trumpian Republicans in because they think they're going to be weaker, when in fact they've got an internal problem on the Democratic side by having these extreme leftists and people that are supporting Schumer, Pelosi, the incumbents that have voted with Schumer and Pelosi, and for Biden agendas, which are very much disliked by most Americans right now, as we're seeing in the polling. So it's a huge risk on the Democrats. They think it's going to be an advantage. And the reason why I think they believe it's going to be an advantage is because they're continuing to go against Trump and use the January 6th as their primary vehicle, to primary talking point, the insurrection. The unfortunate reality for them is there's a lot of people that just don't trust the electoral system and think that there was something wrong with it. And actually, it's now the majority of our Americans. So I don't think that's going to work for them. I don't think the abortion issue is going to work for them because just not that many people overall get abortions, and trying to pin it as a woman's rights issue is undercut immediately when you talk about, you know, women babies, so female babies. I think there are other issues, inflation, you know, the family, the education issues in America, the border issues, and of course the global situation and the economy are all going to weigh very heavily. And I think consultants are making a bunch of money from both parties, and they're beginning to fail. So,
well, you think the consultants are beginning to fail, Jim?
I am. I'm looking at some of the consultants and some of the decisions, some of the advice that they're giving to some of these candidates. And I think certainly the RINO or the establishment Republican candidates that are trying to stay away from America First, they're losing. Trump candidates are winning. America First candidates are winning. And Democrats are putting money into these races that are helping Trump candidates win, which I think is going to be a big disadvantage in the November election for the Democrats, unless they make some Herculean turnaround right now from the direction of the nation, which it doesn't appear they're going to have any success at.
Define what you mean by a Herculean turnaround.
Well, okay, so we've seen this a little bit, this relief on gas and energy prices just recently. Part of it is a lowering of demand. Part of it is people, you know, just can't afford to drive, so there's less of a demand. And of course, we're talking about futures prices, so there's a lot of questions what's happening out there. And it looks like maybe the supply has increased a little bit, but then the administration, the Biden regime, actually says that the EPA is going to start flying over the Permian Basin, the largest oil and gas producing area in the country, and start penalizing these companies for methane emissions in those areas. That's obviously attacking U.S. energy. In this bill they're trying to jam through for their, quote, inflation reduction, which is a total BS cover for their green agenda, they are going to increase green spending, which is going to probably impact inflation significantly, which won't help them at all. And you're seeing this softening in the housing market, which is going to impact the economy. And in spite of the numbers that just came out today on employment, which are up and higher than expectations, they're only now, for the first time since the lockdown, since COVID lockdowns, the initial COVID lockdowns, that they finally caught up to where we were in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think you know, there's a lot to be said that's great right now. I think there's a lot of problems that we're facing. I don't think the advisors that are trying to play these political games are doing anybody any good for their candidates as they're losing across the board. And we'll see how it pans out. But it looks to me like they're still, the Democrats are in a big difficult situation.
Well, I don't know. I would maintain that the election would be very interesting if some of the plans that Biden has for the country come through. But now, I want to be careful and say it's not necessarily Biden's plans, but let's call it the plans of the Democratic Party if they come true. I would maintain, and I think this is a good way to wrap up the show in the sense that we've got about 2.5 minutes left. I would maintain that the election would be so, I don't think it's even going to be close right now, but I would maintain that the election would be a lot closer if, for example, oil prices drop significantly from where they are right now, which is about $105 a barrel, and which puts the equation for me to fill up my car with gas. I have to start doing it for $4.50 a gallon, and people think that that's, you know, a good deal. I don't think it's a good deal because it costs me $80 to fill up my car. Point number one. Point number two. In terms of the emotional issues, the abortion issue, for example, the equal rights in marriage issue. If those things were straightened out, perhaps that would make the election a little bit more interesting. I don't think they will be straightened out personally. And then the thing with the prescription drugs coming from China and the chips coming primarily from the United States, if that in fact became a fact, I think we'd have an interesting election, but I don't think any of those things are going to happen.
I got to agree with you here, Al. I just don't see how they're going to make that, you know, this complete change. And they aren't, that's the problem. It's not even like they're working towards trying to make them a complete change. And of course, you know, we haven't even talked about the border issues.
No.
And we haven't talked about the, you know, the education issues in schools and this gender ideology training that's put out there. And then, of course, the division out there with the racial identity and racial politics.
Right.
These things people are frustrated with, and they see past most of the BS. The problem is some people will see what the talking point is, and they're going to try and, you know, that's what this government right now is attempting to use to direct mm-hmm. themselves
yep.
is talking points.
Right.
The talking points don't last very long.
Well, what else do they have, Jimmy? What else do they have?
Well, that's it. That's the problem. They are pushing an agenda that is not popular with the American people, and that's primarily a green agenda and a socialist agenda. And anti-police. You know, there's a lot of frustration with the violence out there in yep. local. You know, so pushing those agendas, trying to gain power through control. I don't yep. think it's going to work for them.
Hard to say. Hey, you guys, I'm really glad that we're back with you again this weekend. We both Jim and I needed a couple of weeks off, or a week off, or whatever it was. We really needed that. We've been working pretty hard on this particular show. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week, and we'll be back with Daily Editorial.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.